Papa and I are going to record, so y'all go ahead and shut the door.
Ah, the spider!
Ew!
Get a shoe or something! I'll squish it!
That's going to bite me!
Welcome to our Vintage Archives collection. For a special treat, we are releasing the inspirational testimony of missionary and former prisoner of war, Darlene Rose, in 5 nice little bite-sized pieces. Here is this week's offering.
There had been an announcement on the radio by the Imperial Japanese Emperor Hirohito that there was to be a cessation of all fighting. I have seen pictures of the victory celebrations in San Francisco and New York and other big cities. And I thought that wasn't the way it was that day. When they told us that they were going to make arrangements when it would be possible, they would take us down to Makassar. And then, of course, we would have to wait for the boats to come to evacuate us. And they asked if I would come. He asked if I would come, and I would take over translating, interpreting for the Japanese and the Australian and the Dutch and the Americans. And I was translating for them. The American told us that the Philippines had over 6 months been free. And why nothing was ever said to us, we were still their prisoners. And I one day walked back to the little shack up in the jungle. And I heard the sound of a man's voice. And I looked, and coming up the pathway was this young man all in white. My, he looked beautiful. He was so squeaky clean. And here we were, we'd cut off our hair because we didn't have any combs and because livestock was plentiful. And we didn't have any way to keep our hair dry, so we'd chopped our hair off very short. And I was in my work shorts and a sleeveless blouse because everything else had burned in the bombing. And I looked at that man coming, and he had shoes that were so highly polished that you could see yourself in them. And I thought, oh my, I've never seen such altogetherness in my life. And when he got up next to me, he said, "Are you the American?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I am an American." And he just looked at me, and I know that I didn't look like any American girl he'd ever seen. I was a mess. He couldn't keep his eyes off my bare feet. And he said, "Don't you have shoes?" I said, "Oh, no." I said, "We've never had shoes, and that's all right, because I like walking barefoot." He said, "I'm going to see that you get some shoes." He said, "Oh, sorry," he said, "I should have introduced myself. I'm Tom Sawyer, and I'm with the American Navy." And it was on the tip of my tongue to say, "Sure, and I'm Becky Thatcher." But I didn't know if he had a sense of humor or not, so I decided I better not. So I said, "I'm Darlene Dibler from Boone, Iowa." And so he wanted to know what I needed, and I said, "Oh, combs and soap, but most of all, we need food for the children." He said, "Can you mark out a place where I can do a free drop for you tomorrow? We'll get you food and whatever else you need." And they did. I marked it out. I went to Mr. Yamaji. He gave me the white cloth in order to mark out the space on this old rice field. And that day when the friction type lid on the top of these tins, when the tin would hit the ground, that friction type lid would just blow off and everything was pouring out of there, and the little children were screaming. They thought they were more bombs, and we tried to explain to them that those weren't bombs, that those were containing food. And I was out there with the rest of them. We were trying to get these things up, and I found a can of sweetened condensed milk that had burst when it hit the ground. And so I thought, that's a terrible thing to let that be wasted. So I pulled it up, and what was left in there, I ran it into my hand, and then I licked it off there. It was beautiful, but it wasn't long till it came back the other way. I said, "It's the only time I ever enjoyed food going both ways." And then one day they said, "Well, we're going to take you now because the American boys have been flown out." Those boys suffered as I have seldom heard of suffering. They were beaten with iron pipes. And sometimes they said it would be 200 times and the people would faint, and they pour water on them and beat them again till their bodies were like pulp. But they were flying those that had survived out to get medical aid, and they said, if you want to go, we'll take you on the last plane load. So I remember the day when I went down there with Miss Kemp, Miss Seely. We couldn't get her to come, and so she was being put in a place where they could look after her. And that day when I stood there, all I could see in my mind's eye were two lonely crosses on a jungle hill. Under one was my husband, under the other was Dr. R.A. Jaffrey. They had taken the men on a death march, and many of them never came back. And I thought about that, and I thought, here I arrived on my first wedding anniversary, and I'm going home widowed at 26 with not a thing I can call my own. Even the clothes I have, I borrowed. And I said, Lord, I don't think I'll ever come back to these islands again. And then I heard, as I stepped into this little boat to go out to the plane that was there anchored in the bay, I said, Lord, I hear the sound of those running feet, but I'm not going to look at them. I'm not going to turn back and look at them. And then suddenly I heard them calling, and then they began to sing, God be with you till we meet again. And I turned and I looked, and the tears burst out. And I said, God, that's right. That's why I came to these islands. Not because I was Reverend Dibler's wife. I came here because one day, as a little girl, I stood in a missionary meeting, the closing service. I was about the second row from the back. All of the appeal was made for high school and college young people. Nobody noticed this little girl with brown hair sitting there at the back. And when we stood up, and I heard the appeal made to them, and I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I turned around and looked, and there was no one there. And I knew it was my Lord. And I just said to him, Lord, what is it? And he spoke to me, and he said, would you go anywhere for me, no matter what it costs? I was so thrilled to think that God had even noticed me. And I said to him that night, Lord Jesus, I'd go anywhere for you, no matter what it costs. And as I turned and I looked, and God broke my heart, and I called out to them, someday I will come home again to you. It took me 3 years before I passed a physical. On the way home, they took us to Balikpapan, and there they put us in the hospital. And that night, I tell you, I didn't realize what a terrible thing a bed was. That thing had a give to it, and every time in the night when I would turn, that thing was turning over, and I knew I was being thrown out or it was an earthquake, and I'd grab the sides of the bed, and I whispered to Margaret, Margaret, are you sleeping? And she said, I can't sleep. And she said, let's get out and get on the floor. I said, that's a good idea. Let's get out and we'll sleep there, and then we'll wake up and jump back into bed before all these nurses see us. And then we talked it over a little more and said, what'll we do if they catch us on the floor? We decided we better stay in bed. They had gone out and gotten pajamas for us. They thought and I said, oh, we're used to sleeping in our clothes. They said, tonight you're not sleeping in them. And all they could find were some pajamas that belonged to these Australian troops. And they were these very tall people. And I remember putting on those trousers, and I got it right up to here. And I said, oh, I don't need this top. But I thought, I won't have much movement in my arms. So I pulled it down and rolled up the legs. And then I put my arm in this one and rolled it up till I found this hand. And then I rolled this one up. And finally, we all laughed. And we were in bed. And they said, tonight you're not sleeping in your clothes. And then the next day, after we had had tea in the morning, here came a jeep. And they took us out and they said, we're taking you on the last plane load of each one of the hops between here and Manila. So then they took us up to Palawan Island. And I saw that large cemetery out there, white stones marking the place where many American boys laid down their lives. I am a patriot. I believe in America. And I'm glad that God allowed me to be born here, to learn about Him, to have a Bible. When I was a child, I had a compulsion to memorize Scripture. I memorized books of the Bible, chapters, Psalms. That didn't matter that they took my Bible away from me, because it was all there, and God played it back to me. I wonder if you lost your Bible tonight, how well off would you be? You don't know when it's going to be taken away from you. Even to your hymns, I see you all with your hymn books up there in front of you. You ought to have it down here, because God does minister to music, through music. And I remember when we got into Palawan Island, and I looked down, and we were still had the mentality of a POW. And when I saw that white buildings painted white, all the men in white, I said to Miss Kemp, they are not very well camouflaged. And there they were, and they were all in dress uniform. And I thought, they don't know who's coming. We're just POWs. I wonder who they really expected. But when we got up there, and there was a sidewalk up to this big dining hall, and there were men on both sides standing at attention, boy, my heart just burst with pride seeing those boys. And then when we got inside, someone struck up the band, and they started to play Star Spangled Banner, and they unfurled that beautiful flag down in the center. I tell you, I went to pieces. I just cried and cried and cried. They'd come up and they'd pat us on the shoulder, and he said, don't cry, you're free now. And I said, I know. But there were so many times I thought I'd never see that beautiful flag. They said, don't cry, it's all right. It's all right. We're going to have dinner now. And I tried to straighten up my face, and I tried to get these clothes so they looked a little better, because it was about a size 16 on a size 6 body. And I had taken a belt and tied it real tight and cinched it around, and I bloused it up over the top of it so that the bottom of the hem wasn't down about to my ankles. But when we walked in and I saw all that white linen on the tablecloths, and they put us up at the head table, and everyone was smiling to us, and I thought, if I eat all this that's here in front of me, I'm going to be sick, but it's going to be worth it this time. And everyone was so pleased, and they just tried to do everything for us. And that night they had outside a film that they were showing, and we sat down. I don't remember anything about the film, but I remember the ice cream and the chocolates. And then the next day they were all out there ready to see us on our way. We were the last camp that was ever found. So this was the closing up of bringing the POWs in. And then we dropped down in Manila, and they said, here's a bus. I tell you, that man who drove that bus, he would have done well the Indianapolis 500. And we just hung on to the backs and the sides of the seat to keep from being rolled into the aisle of the bus. They finally got us there. And one of the first things they did was to give us a physical. And they said, oh my. And they laid out all these vitamins that we had to take and the medicine. I said, sir, after I've eaten all those, I'm not going to need anything else. I won't have room for it. And then they said, here, you go over. We're going to see that you get a permanent. I thought, isn't that beautiful? I like doctors that write out prescriptions for a permanent. And so they got our hair fixed up, and then they brought in the boxes from the Red Cross. And the first place I wanted to find was the post office, and I went over, and I said, would you have any mail for Darlene Dibler? He looked, he said, I'm sorry, I don't. And I went back day after day, and finally he said, boy, I don't know why somebody wouldn't write to you. And I was so embarrassed, I didn't go back again. And till the day I was to be taken out, and the ship came, the Klipfontein, and they had left us there for almost a month because they didn't feel we were strong enough even to go on a ship. But finally, they put us on 23 days outside of San Francisco. We were supposed to dock in San Francisco. We just gone in under the Golden Gate, and I saw all those lights of San Francisco. Everybody was so excited. Oh, that beautiful city. I said, I don't care. I said, I don't know anybody out here, no one at all. I had an auntie that lived down south, but I don't know where she is. I don't even know the address. And everybody was owing and awing. And I was feeling, Lord, what am I going to do when I get off this ship? And then I saw the lights. Oh, I said to Margaret, don't they know that a war's on? No, it is not. And I was so fascinated with lights that you had turned on everywhere. And then we were just getting ready to pull in, and suddenly the loudspeaker was turned on, and they said, we're pulling out again. Because the whole harbor is full, there are no berths empty, so they're going to take you on up to Seattle, Washington, and there you will be taken off the ship. I was so glad to spend another 2 days on that ship. That was known territory. When I got off there, I hadn't had any letter from my mother and dad, and I hadn't heard from anybody. And I thought, when I get there, I don't know where I'm going. And when we finally docked, it was Navy Day. And they said, tonight we will delouse you, and then tomorrow we'll start processing you. I was glad to spend another night on that ship. And we were sleeping three deep in hammocks out on the deck. There were so many POWs of us. Then the next morning, I saw my friends leaving, and I saw them going down the gangplank and meeting their families and their friends out there. And I stood there at the rail, and suddenly it struck me, the reason you haven't heard from Mother and Dad is that they're gone. And I went back and I crawled in underneath of those hammocks. And I said, Lord, you took Russell. Did you have to take Mother and Daddy also? So sweetly, my Lord spoke to me and he said, my child, you can still trust me. I said, all right, Father, but I need to find a Red Cross woman. I've been looking for one all morning. And I said, I haven't seen them. And I came around the corner of the deck of the ship, and I saw a Red Cross woman, and I latched onto her, and I said, you wait a minute, now you have to help me. I said, I'm a POW. And I said, it's been over 4 years. I haven't heard anything from my father and mother. I don't know where they are, but I need money. I've got to get back to Iowa to trace anybody from the family that's alive. And she said, honey, what's your name? I said, Darlene Diver. She said, I've been on the ship all morning looking for you. I have three telegrams. They're all from Mother and Dad. And I opened them up. Mother said, we moved out to Oakland, California in 1942. And we knew you were on the ship and we wanted to get there in order to greet you. But when they took you on up to Seattle, we wouldn't have time to get there. And so we've sent money to the Western Union office. And you go there and you get that money and you get a ticket on the train and come down and we'll be here to meet you. And you call collect as soon as you can get to a telephone. I went to get my ticket first after getting the money. And I looked at everybody who was going by me on the street. And I thought, oh my, just look at their coats. It's all that real tight nap this year. And I looked down at this coat I'd gotten from the Red Cross and I looked like a bear. It was a real long, shaggy thing. And I went back to the ship. And I asked the captain if I could borrow his razor. And he looked at me rather puzzled. And I found a secluded spot on the deck. And I gave my coat a shave. And it really looked pretty good. Then I went to the train station. And I went up to the window and I said, please, sir, I would like to have a ticket for Oakland, California. He said, my dear, don't you know a war's been on? Only Army, Navy, Air Force personnel travel. I was just ready to faint. And I said, sir, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. I said, I'm a POW, and I just got here, and I'm trying to get home. Oh, he said, we've got lots of tickets for people like you. And I was in business again. And then I got over to a telephone, and my goodness, it wasn't one of those things that just was on the wall. And you lift up the thing, and then someone says, number, please. And I said, here was this round thing there, and it had numbers, and it had letters. And I was standing there, and I thought, now, how am I going to use this thing? And somebody who must have known how puzzled I was, he stepped up and he just shoved the door open a little bit and he said, "Could I help you?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm a POW. I don't know how to operate that thing, and I'm trying to call my folks." And he said, "What's the number?" And I said, "This is the number." And so he called. I said, "Call collect." And so he rang it through for me. And you know, I've said so many times tonight, the Lord spoke to me. And people say, "How do you know it's the Lord?" This is the best illustration I know. When I got that call went through, and I heard the receiver going up on the other end, and I heard someone say, "Hello, darling." I knew it was Mother. Nobody ever said my name like Mother did. I hadn't heard her voice in 8 years, but it was Mother. I said, "Hello, Mother." And I couldn't say another thing. She so calmly told me that my brother had just gotten in from Germany in New York the night before, and he said, "Mother, did you hear anything from Darlene?" And I said, "Mm-hmm." And then she went on to tell me about my daddy and about everybody, and all I could say was, "Mm-hmm." I couldn't answer. I was crying so hard. She said, "Now, honey, you just go and you just be sure that you get on that train, and we'll be here to meet you." Somebody told me that I really needed to have a good foundation garment. Well, at that moment, I didn't have a thing to girdle. But I went and I decided I'd get something that looked decent, and I'd gotten the money from the Western Union. And then I thought, I'm going to be on that train for a day and a night, and I better have a suitcase. And so I went and got a suitcase and a purse, and I put what little money I had in there. I got on that train. I suddenly realized at Portland, Oregon, I had not told Mother and Dad what train I was coming in on. So it was 2:00 in the morning. And so I went out and I found a man who would take my telegram. And I didn't realize it was just sent right through. It was phoned right through. And I said, "Kill the fatted calf. Love, Darlene. I'm arriving at 9:30 tomorrow morning." And then I got back on the train, not realizing that it was being phoned directly through. And Dad said that when that telephone began to ring, Mother jumped up and she ran to the telephone. He said, all I could hear was, "What?" And then something would be repeated and she said, "What?" And then evidently the girl laughed and she said, "Have you not heard of the lost son, the prodigal son? The lost is found. Kill the fatted calf." She said, "Thank you," and put the receiver down quickly and ran in and shook my dad, and they laughed. She said, she's all right. She hasn't lost her sense of humor. And then the next morning, when it rolled into the depot in Oakland, California, I was looking for two faces, and I finally spotted my father the time he saw me, and he was waving to me, "Darlene, Darlene." He always called me baby. He said, "Baby." And he turned and yelled, "Mother, she's here, she's here." And my father came up and he put his arms around me. And Mother joined us. And I said, "Daddy, Mother, I thought so many times I would never, ever see you again." And as I looked out over the tops of their heads, the sun broke through the clouds, those beautiful clouds. And suddenly I thought, "Oh Lord, someday those clouds will part asunder and you will be there and I will know you. For with the eyes of my spirit, I've looked into that beautiful face. I have no regrets for any of the things that God has led me through. I wonder about you young people. I was on a field where we had more graves than live missionaries. I'll tell you this tonight, if you don't know him, you aren't going to make it. I look at young people like you, and I often think, God, if someday you just call to me and say, come on home, I wonder who's going to step into my place out there. Do you have a life to give for your Lord? He gave everything for you. I heard him call, come follow, and that was all. My gold grew dim. I rose and followed him. Wouldn't you follow if you heard him call? I don't count the cost anymore. I still say to my Lord, at night when I lie down, precious Lord, I'd still go anywhere for you. The compensations are so tremendous.
We hope you are encouraged and inspired by this portion of the testimony of Darlene Rose. As always, don't forget to check out our great weekly specials.